Good day, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to Spark Holdings Limited's year-end financial results for the 12 months ended 31 March 2022. All participants will be in listen-only mode. There will be an opportunity to ask questions when prompted. Please note that this event is being recorded. I would now hand the conference over to the Investor Relations Officer, Sakhilin Dhlomo. Please go ahead, ma'am.
Thank you very much, Judith. Good morning, all. I welcome you once again to our FY 2022 financial results for the year ended 31 March 2022. To take us through the presentation this morning is the Sephaku Holdings CEO, Neil Crawford-Lazarus, and Neil will be joined by the Sephaku Cement CEO, Dewaan Clawson, and the Metair CEO, Kenneth Capes, for the question and answer session. The SENS announcement, the annual financial results, and the presentation are available on our website for download. Alternatively, you can actually download them from the webcast download tab. Otherwise, if you fail to do so, please don't hesitate to send me an email to sakhile@sephol.co.za, and I will forward it through to you as soon as possible. At this point, I want to hand over to Neil to proceed with the presentation. Over to you, Neil.
Thank you very much, Sakhile, and good morning to everybody that's participating. I am pleased in presenting you with the financial results. I believe that everybody's got the presentation up in front of them. I'm quickly going to move through the first four pages. Page one, just the welcoming slide. Then on page two, just the agenda, which is also really familiar to most of you. Financial review, the trading environment, operational review, outlook, and then appendices if there's anybody that's new to the group and wants some more information about the structure and the operations. They'll find it in that section there. There's nothing new on the disclaimer on slide number two. That is the same what you have seen before, but at your leisure, please read through that one again. On page three, we are moving towards the financial review for the current year. On slide four, the salient points for the group. The net profit after tax was 45 million rand, 25 million rand more than the previous year. That resulted in an earnings per share of 0.175 and an EPS of 0.1767, which is 0.11 up from the previous year due to the fact that I think last year's EPS had a bit of sale of vehicles in it that brought that down from the 0.0783 EPS. The Sephaku Cement equity accounted earnings is 29 million rand compared to the 16 million rand of 2021. Looking at Metair specifically, revenue of 785 million, up from the COVID year's 634 million, and an EBITDA of 75 million compared to 55 million of the previous year. EBITDA margin 8.5% and EBIT margin of 6.1%. 48 million rand, that's a 15 million rand increase from the previous year. The net profit after tax is also up from 16.6 million to just under 30 million rand for Metair. Sephaku Cement sales revenue increased by 200 million from 2.4 billion to 2.6 billion. EBITDA was fairly flat, down 6 million from 381 million to 375 million. EBIT margin correspondingly down from 15.9% to 14.6%. I think the background to that we have discussed fairly extensively in the interim results as well, because there was a large effect of that came through in the first half, where we had the kiln stoppage and started with the low base of clinker, and also the results that we published when Cement had their full year results included in the Dangote results. EBIT margin 8.6% on 219.4 million rand. Exactly the same as the 2021 numbers. Net profit after tax 81.9 million as opposed to the 44.4 million. That all lies in the difference in interest rates. Not interest rates, interest payments coming down from 163 to 114 for the year, and then a 5 million increase in the theoretical tax, of course, due to the improvement of the results due to the interest that was lower. 82 versus 45 on the cement slide, moving on to slide 5. The revenue trend from each year, I think if we're looking at the right side of the slide, the last 3 years, that's a question that is often asked, when do you expect to return or to improve to the pre-COVID-19 levels? And for us, that of course is the FY2020. That's got 9 months of 2019, 3 months of 2020 in it, and only 1 week of COVID. So that was our pre-COVID year. 21 then saw a reduction of both revenue and volume, pricing up slightly to 103 of the comparative, and you can see that in 2022, in the current year, we have been above the COVID year levels on both the parameters and, of course, then the result of that. However, 2019 calendar year, which is really reflective of our 2020 year, was already a fairly weak year for construction and cement in South Africa. That's the year where our own cement saw a reduction of 15% in volumes, and I think industry-wide numbers as high as 19% reduction in sales volumes were reported. So if you go back and look at the 2018-2019 financial years, we are still below those with regards to the sales volume. Pricing is up 108% to the index, which is also not really recovering the PPI for a four-year period, which I think just again points to the very good recovery that we have seen in the turnaround strategy on cement, with the results resulting from those drivers. We saw looking at the last year, we saw an increase of 24% in revenue year on year, 18% of that coming from sales and 5% coming from the pricing. Moving on to slide 6, which shows the profitability trend. Again, looking at the five-year trend and where we were in financial year 2018, before we saw the first reduction in 19 and 20, turned around at a 34 EBITDA and a loss for that year of 600,000 rand. Recovery last year to levels of 55 and 16, and the current year 75 EBITDA and a 29.6 million rand profit after tax. And I think Kenneth will talk to how we are experiencing the first 2 months of the current year, but I think, again, margins are on those levels improving, but we're not yet seeing our results that we did achieve in financial year 2018. Moving on to slide 7, that is the cement comparison. Again, looking at the three-year trend, everything is up from the COVID year. Cement was, of course, only had a lockdown of under level 5, whereas cement here was locked down at a 4 and 5. And then cement saw the very good demand of cement in the second half of 2020, when the homeowner, do-it-yourself builders, that spent quite a lot on acquiring cement, and something that we've probably seen leveling off in the current year. So there was a 7% increase revenue year on year, 1% decrease in sales volume from last year, and an 8% increase in pricing. Volumes are still relatively flat from the previous terms, as we've shown in 2017 and 2018, and not yet on those levels, still running, as far as volumes is concerned, on 92% of what we've achieved earlier. We look at slide 8, it shows the profitability trend of SEPSEM. Again, over the five-year period, we see 3 years of recovery. I think just for those of you that's not familiar with the history, the 128 in 2018 included 84 million for a Section 611L tax benefit. So that's the reason why that one is out of line. It would have probably been, as I said, 84 of that 128 was tax. But a steady improvement in the numbers over the last couple of years, specifically on the profit after tax number, the EBITDA is fairly flat, but that profit after tax has improved due to the fact that we have been servicing debt throughout these periods with those EBITDAs, and we've seen a steady increase in profitability as a result. We're always being asked about the cost split for SEPSIM, and we include it on slide 9. I'm not going to talk to that, but it is in the presentation for those of you who are interested in that breakdown. Available for you to look at your leisure. Moving on to slide 10. Financial review of the group. It excludes cement. Opening cash of Metier and SEP hold of 33 million rand. Cash generated was 66. The net finance cost 11. Taxation paid 9. PPE. The net payment for PPE was 13 million rand. That's the items that was not leased, like the vehicles that you will see further to the right. Loan proceeds. During 2020, we sold a number of the older vehicles to contractors that do provide services to us, which we refer to as lorry owner drivers. Those were in part vendor financed, and that is just repayments of their loans over a 36-month period that has come through in this 12-month period. That's the green loan proceeds. Repayment of installment sales, repayment of leases speaks to itself, and then the repayment of the debt principal, 23 million rand. On that, of which 13.311 was the required repayment, there's a 10 million sweep there that we've done to close the year with a 29 million rand cash. I think the 10 million reduction in the loan is just better than having that additional cash on hand in the bank. Sorry, I think I'll skip the slide now. Yes, there's the Metier debt reduction on slide 11. Started with 71 million, 23.3 million repayment. Interest portion is 5 million. And we ended the year a debt of 48.3. That will reduce in the current financial year to 35 million, which is payable in the first month of the following financial year. Looking at the cement cash flow analysis, they started the year with 480 million rand. Cash generated during the year, 343. Small portion of tax, net finance cost 61 million, and net cash from investment activities 45. Cash from financing activities 385 going to the banks on the repayment of the senior debt, and the year was ended on 325 million rand. I think let's bear in mind that 480 at the beginning of the year included a shareholder capital injection of 125 during that period. So might have been down to 200 if that injection did not take place during the previous financial year. Looking at their debt profile, started the 2020 calendar year at a billion rand, the 353 you just saw on the cash flow statement, interest payments included in that, so the year was ended on 666. We've already made another 138 payments on 1st of February and 1st of May, so currently the debt outstanding to this on the senior debt is 528. We are well advanced in refinancing the bullet of 388 due on the 1st of November. We do have final credit approval from both the senior lenders that will continue with this. As you know, the original senior debt was six, a consortium of six different banks. This will now go down to two, the two main participants in that function in the original loan, Standard Bank and Nedbank, which will continue with the financing facility then from November onwards. The agreed terms is a 3-year term loan at JIBOR plus 3.25%. We're currently, of course, paying JIBOR plus 4.5 on the original loan. So there will be an improvement on that cost of funding. And there's also a working capital facility being secured at prime minus 0.5% to actually to facilitate just the swings and roundabouts of debtors and creditors mass matches and stop at the end of each financial period. Moving on to trading environment, and then slide 15. Weak macroeconomy since 2012, and I think, you know, looking at the South African picture in red, a good injection of state capture there, and very flat growth for us during the period, and not really anticipated to improve. If we're looking at the IMF forecast on the right for 22, world 3.6 with a 4.4 in January, and South Africa a 1.9 the January number as well as the revised April 22 number, but expecting for 2023 a 1.4 for South Africa against the world growth of 3.6%. Slide 16 showing the decline in the gross fixed capital formation as a percentage of GDP. And to the right, the distinction between private business enterprise, public corporations, and general government, basically showing that it's only private enterprise that has recovered post the COVID decline and is currently above the 100, but the rest are performing below that line. Moving on to slide 17. Again, GDP per sector. On the left, the construction industry, the blue line, which is the bottom of the pile on the right. Once you move past the grey line period in the first half of 2020, you'll see that trade, catering and accommodation outperformed everybody else, and the lowest there is construction. Which we've seen due to a number of promises with regarding infrastructure spent by government and allocation of large contracts, which have just not got off the ground to date. Building plans passed on the right, non-residential, this is showing to January 22. We've actually seen a reversal of these two trends over the last 3 months. There's a pickup on the non-residential side again, but on the residential side, there has been a decline again. I think to a large extent, a number of factors influencing discretionary income on the residential side, interest rates, back to school issues and things like that, rain in the first quarter as well. We've seen a negative reaction on the residential demand for cement during this period. Slide 18, cement imports increased significantly over the last 5 years. And again, a very slow or no reaction on the ITEC side on this. This has been going on for much longer than what we anticipated originally, and I think there's a big question mark whether industry will be assisted in this way at all. There's a requirement from government that industry should commit to no increases on prices as a quid pro quo. But I think industry's argument has always been that our quid pro quo is really already included in our full cost of production. This is not a tariff that is required for protection. It's a safeguard protection, purely safeguarding against the cost of doing business in South Africa, our much higher emissions control, our requirements of the ownership and everything else that accompanies the cost of producing the goods in South Africa as opposed to the cost of landing the imported cement and competing in the South African markets. But as you can see there, no reduction in those numbers during the last year. Moving on to the operational review. slide 20. Met here, just feedback on the 2020 focus areas. It's basically there to be seen. We established the plant in the Western Cape and we utilized existing assets to the extent that it was possible. We did increase our fleet, but that was partly Western Cape and also demand in Gauteng. We further reduced bank debt as planned, as you've seen on that, 32% to 48 million. I think during the COVID period, debtor insurance has just become prohibitive and we have implementing a much stricter set of control on customer credit process and looking at a self-insurance product there rather than getting external insurance for debtors. On the health and safety side, zero operational fatalities. We had 16 employees that contracted COVID-19, but all are fully recovered. And we've got a 75% vaccination rate in the company. Looking at cement on slide 21, a further reduction in debt, as we have discussed, down to the 666 at year-end and into the 500s at the moment. To improve plant reliability through expanding the Tokafatso Organization Improvement Initiative, that's really bearing fruit today, and then it's got a buy-in from all participants. We finally obtained approval for a social and labor plan. This was a very long haul with getting community across the line, but it has been awarded in January of this year. And we are also well on our way in achieving the target of 30% of available renewables, obtaining as 27.9% usage of the renewables, of the alternative fuels in our process. Health and safety stats for cement, zero operational fatalities during that year as well. We have 124 employees that contracted COVID-19 and we had two mortalities on that side. The balance has fully recovered and we have a 17% vaccination on that rate in cement. This quarter for cement, as you know, their results included is for the calendar year ending 21. So at this stage, can look back on the first quarter and say that there was a 2% year-on-year increase in revenue, but that was all in price. Volumes were down 6%. Low construction activity, high rainfall, and then also the reduced consumer discretionary incomes that I referred to when I was discussing the curve of demand. Moving on to the outlook, a fourth agenda item. Slide 24, really just expecting the medium term demand to stay flat. Demand for mortgages expected to decline as interest rates increase. Low non-residential construction activity expected to persist as we saw some increase there in the plans approved, but nothing really big. Implementation of government infrastructure could provide the impetus that we require, but I think it's well known and well documented and reported in the media as to how slow that process is really going. So our focus will remain a cost control and reducing the debt and monitoring the possibilities that the Western Cape present us with. Ladies and gentlemen, that concludes the presentation. As I said, the appendices is available for those that need additional background information. Thanks, Judith.
Thank you very much, sir. Ladies and gentlemen, for the benefit of the participants who have connected via the telephone lines, you're welcome to press star then 1 on your touchtone phone or on a keypad on your screen. If you decide to withdraw your question, you're welcome to press star then 2 to exit the question queue. For the benefit of the participants who have connected via the webcast, you are welcome to pose your questions in the question box provided on your screen. At this stage, we have no questions from the lines. I will now hand over for questions from the webcast.
Good morning, Judith. It doesn't seem like we have questions on the webcast either. I think we can give it a minute or two, and we might be getting some questions through the conference call.
Thank you. Ladies and gentlemen, just a reminder, if you'd like to ask a question, you're welcome to press star then 1 to place yourself in the question queue. Alternatively, pose your questions in the question box provided on the webcast.
Hi, Judith. I think we've received some questions. I will just start with the first one from Carl, who is from Business Day. He says, good morning. Could you please expand on your hybrid transport model and what you are hoping to achieve? In addition, any further areas of management focus to offset inflationary pressure costs? So I think the first one is to Metier, and then the second part is to both Metier and Sephako Cement.
Thank you, Sakila.
Yeah.
Thank you. So in regards to the hybrid transport model, we are finding that, firstly, that the banks are reluctant to give finance to subcontractors, especially in the construction space. So by having the hybrid model allows us to increase our fleet as and when required, a lot quicker, that we have our own vehicles, we can move around from one region to the next region. It also help assist us in understanding the costs of transport so that we're not overpaying for subcontracted transport. As far as the inflationary pressures are concerned, we did put through an increase on the 1st of June to try and recover some of that. So far, I'm very happy to say that we seem to be doing very well on it. We've got a couple of initiatives which we've put in place in terms of holding on certain expenses which we believe that are not critical. And at this point in time, I'm pretty happy to say that we seem to be successful at that as well. I hope that answers the question.
If we can get Sephako Cement, do you want to talk about management focus on inflationary pressure costs?
Thank you, Sakile. Yes, as mentioned, severe input cost pressures with the global supply chain and energy crises. So firstly, pricing is something that we're aggressively looking at closely, understanding, of course, the very tough trading environment, but pricing is certainly one lever. Secondly, we're looking at a number of initiatives, primarily around the use of alternative fuels and waste materials to try and offset some of the energy cost. We're also looking at optimizing on market segmentation to try and grow quality volumes as opposed to just volumes in general. In addition to that, there's also a number of, we believe, supply chain optimization opportunities in terms of, you know, taking materials to the market and materials back to our plants that we've not fully exploited. So that, in addition to the obvious cost consciousness in terms of discretionary expenditure, would be the main levers that we're targeting to offset those pressures.
Thank you, Duan. Our next question is from Charles Bowles from Titanic Capital Partners. Sephako Cement, can you provide some further insight into competitor activities? Are competitors running consistently or is supply erratic? What is your perception of Lafarge or AfriSam in the market? Over to you, Duan.
Thank you, Sakile. Well, firstly, we're not totally obsessed with competitor activity, but I think it's important to state that we do have everyone under pressure as far as the trading environment is concerned. So from time to time, you know, one hears of plant breakdowns, etc. But for the most part, our view is that most of the competitors are trading, are operating. Some might not be at full capacity. There's a number of competitors that have got the flexibility to start or not run some of their producing units. So for the most part, most competitors are still active in the market as we speak.
Thank you, Duan. Another question from Charles Bowles. Can you clarify, have the credit guarantee companies pulled back or repriced cost of cover? I think Neil touched on that briefly. If so, to what extent has cost of cover changed? Maybe we can start with Metier, Kenneth.
Thanks, Akila. So as far as we haven't actually looked back at that. We cancelled ours because it became too expensive, and we started our own self-funded insurance through a third party, and that seems to be working well at this point in time. So we haven't actually had a revisit with external insurance other than what we're doing with our third party at the moment. And I think the cover at the time was CGIC, and we haven't gone back to anybody else with regards to that. So I don't know the cost of cover.
Thank you, Kenneth. Over to you, Duane.
Sakile, thanks. Yes, as far as we're concerned, our customer base is fairly stable, has been fairly stable. We still have cover. As much as some of the risk factors would come into play with new applications for customers, yes, I think it is a little stricter than what it used to be, purely because of the environment we're operating within. But for the most part, we're not seeing a massive year-on-year movement in terms of the cost of cover, as mentioned, purely because of our stable customer base.
Thank you, Duane. The next question is from Rowan Gerler from Chronax Research. Are you considering a surcharge for high fuel and other costs in the cement price? Duane?
Thank you, Sakile. Rowan, yes, we know some competitors have gone that route. We specifically decided not to have that single line on the invoicing, but rather to look at movements in terms of energy cost and then engaging our customer base when it needs to be done in terms of price increases and the like. So it's not something that we've considered in terms of month-on-month movement as an automatic cost line in terms of the invoicing. We'd rather do it the conventional way in terms of engaging the customer base. I think if one looks at the market, the frequency of movements and engagement from various incumbents, yes, it is more volatile, and we are seeing more regular attempts to increase pricing to just pass on some of these input cost pressures. So the answer is no, we haven't considered that, but we've decided as we speak not to implement that at this stage.
Thank you, Duane. I'm going to combine the two questions from Ndumiso Zulu, Old Mutual Alternative Investments. He asks, what's the current shareholder debt to Dangote, which I think maybe might be talking up to the end of first quarter this year? And related to that, Charles Bowles asks, is the Dangote loan on an evergreen basis? Is this subordinated to the bank debt? Will this only be repaid once the bank debt is paid down? So I think we can take both questions together. Duane?
Yeah, I will take that one, Sakire.
Okay, thank you, Neil.
Hi, Charles. Yes, we did on slide 13 state that the DCP shareholder loan balance was 627 million rand at the 31st of December 2021, and the interest rate on that one is a 3-month JIBOR plus 4%. So there is a quarter of interest that has been added, or at this stage, in 5 months interest that has been added to that amount. Charles, yes, it is subordinated to the senior debt, and there was also one of the covenants in the senior debt was a debt service cover ratio at 1.5 for a cash lockup. There was a 1.5 normal technical debt cover ratio, 1.3, and then a cash lockout on 1.5. And cement for most of the time, whilst operating above the 1.3, was operating at about 1.43, 1.45. So we never got out of cash lockup, and no payments was made due to that restriction. So it's not that it was not repayable at all, but it was subordinated and only payable once debt service cover ratio was above 1.5. We are now, of course, with the refinancing of the 400 million rand three-year term loan, that comes down, the servicing of that from where we've been paying 350 million plus interest in the last year or two, the total debt service will go to about 150, which will free up cash. We are still finalizing, although we have a final term sheet, we're doing legals and we'll see exactly how everything is worded as to what is available above, you know, at what level lockup will be and how much of the debt can be repaid in the next period. But yes, it's not, it is a loan that, that will be serviced partly with the term loan in the next 3 years and then solely after that, probably for another 2 to 3 years. We've not discussed or finalized the service of that loan. We will do that as soon as we really have the final documentation on the 400 million so that we know exactly what our terms are. When we know, but once we have the final documentation and that really takes place, which will be in the second half of the year or just after, between August and October, we will settle a profile for the other loan repayment as well. But there is also a agreement between shareholders that shareholders and broadly shareholders should start sharing in the returns once the senior debt is at the levels and currently is, and we are above the lockup. I mean, the lockup will at the end of the day determine what is available, first of all, for the broader shareholders, and then secondly, to service that loan.
Thank you, Neil. The next two questions are coming from Chris Reddy. He's at All Weather Capital. I'll start with the first one. He is saying, regarding to slide 9 on costs, I think we've partially answered this, but there's a secondary part to this question. He says, please, can you comment on the ability to pass on further price increases to maintain margins? What is the likely impact on volumes given this low activity? Can we just start with Kenneth, please, and then we'll move on to Duan.
Sakira, I think he's referring to the cement slide.
Oh, okay. Please, Duan, if you can just take the question.
Sakile, yes, thanks. Well, if one looks at the recent energy cost increase that took effect in June, I think not all of that input cost has been passed on to the customer from the general sense that we're getting from price increases. As mentioned, we will probably see more frequent adjustments to pricing as you know, as this very unpredictable energy crisis continues. So I think the impact on volume, of course, that the trading environment remains very competitive. So yeah, it is a very delicate balance to get the pricing right without affecting volumes too much. So I think it's going to be challenging times lying ahead. But so far, we've not been managing to pass all of that on to the customer, no, unfortunately.
Thank you, Duan. And the secondary question, maybe you can take it now before Kenneth comes in. It's about competitive and the competitive environment. Do you expect any market share gains or losses in the near future?
Thank you, Sakile. The one obvious unknown is imports. We know that for the first 4 months there has been, because you know, a number of factors, global supply chain, you know, shipping container availability, etc., vessel availability, has been a 26% year-on-year reduction on imports. In the absence of the safeguard, which, as you mentioned, has not been finalized, and we're not holding our breath at the moment that would be forthcoming anytime soon. So that's certainly one factor to consider in terms of the overall competitive landscape. As far as the incumbents, as mentioned, it would appear that most incumbents are operating, and so for now, with you know the uncertainty on energy cost, on imports, on infrastructure development, I think it's business as usual compared to last year, very tough trading environment, and survival of the fittest. Sakile?
Thank you, Duan. Kenneth, on your end, competitive environment and any market share gains or losses you're seeing?
I don't think the competitive environment has changed. I think it's as tight as it has been over the last few years, something we're getting used to living with. With regards to market volumes, yes, we think the market will be flat. We will probably continue to be in line with our share of that. So probably flat year on year. We're not really forecasting anything much better than that. We have already secured a number of contracts, which we are very busy with at the moment. And if I look at it year on year, we're kind of running along where we were previously. So that would be my comment on that.
Thank you. Thank you, Kenneth. A follow-up question from Chris Reddy to you, Duan. What would you say are the reasons for the delay with ITEX on the safeguard tariffs?
Well, there's a number of factors. I think as industry finalizing the submission of data took quite some time and was quite challenging. There was differences of opinion. Let's not forget that not all producers did partake in this application. And so that was certainly one reason. And you know, with delayed submission of information, so it gets outdated, and so we're back to square one. So this dragged us along for a period of time. We have finally, from, again, not knowing directly, but through consultants that we engage at industry level, got to a point where the incumbents all submitted relevant updated data. We've had subsequent meetings with the minister, and it's a question of, at the time, that's where the minister indicated that there would be these required commitments in exchange for protection. We've not had any formal feedback since. The feedback that we had was more related to the anti-dumping duties, which incidentally was now successfully passed just last week. So as far as the current delays, we're not 100% sure. So as industry, we're contemplating whether we should be engaging the minister as a follow-up. But yes, as mentioned, it could perhaps be the requirements that could be delaying the current process. We have responded, as I said, not regarding the safeguard, but on the anti-dumping. So that's been responded to DTIC and to ITEX. So those would be the reasons for the delays in that decision.
Thank you, Duan. We don't have any more questions from the webcast. Judith, would you have any, or Tembi, from the conference call?
No, we have no further questions on the lines. Can I hand over for closing remarks?
Absolutely. Thank you, Judith. Neil, would you want to say any closing remarks, or can we end the webcast?
Yeah, no, nothing additional from me. Thank you very much for everybody that joined. Have a good day.
And thank you once again for participating in this webcast. If you have further questions, you'll find there's an email address at the back of the presentation, and there's a direct email to email address is sakile@sephold.co.za, and we'll get back to you within 24 hours. Otherwise, have a wonderful day, and hopefully we'll be chatting to you soon. Goodbye.
Thank you. Ladies and gentlemen, that concludes today's event. Thank you for joining us. You may now disconnect your lines.